and gentlemen. And what I'd like to do, I would like to end at 9:30. So, and I think we need to reserve 20 minutes at the end. So let's see what we can cover in 35, 40 minutes if for some reason we think we need more time on this. Be honest, everybody. Have people had a chance to read the materials? If they have not...
I read enough to get a sense of...
You haven't had much of a chance. Great. Then let's start... I don't know, Candace or Anne-Marie, who wants to start and give us enough background so that if people haven't had a chance to read the details...
Well, I'll open it and then I'll turn it over to Anne-Marie. We received a letter from Massachusetts Office Inspector General with regards to this program. And the way that it was presented to us, it wasn't an investigation. It was simply an overview to give us some feedback about the status of our program and to make some suggestions that would, tighten up some of our procedures so that we wouldn't be vulnerable to suspicion of fraud and other things. So, while I think we probably didn't need to necessarily respond to it, we felt that it was important to really look into it, to investigate on our own some of the things that they had mentioned in their report. And we had, we largely disagreed with their findings, but I think we feel good that we took the time to look deeply into our procedures because there's some lessons to be learned from it that we can be more mindful of. I think particularly making sure that the documentation that we have about some of the things that they've cited is easily found and made available to the auditors and such. And so I think overall we tried to take it within the spirit in which it was intended to be guidance. So that's sort of like the general template. And Anne-Marie, is there anything you'd like to add to that in the particulars? Or, we can certainly just answer questions.
Well, I don't know if you would prefer to go through questions that you have about specific so-called findings or... But generally, this grant came to us directly from the federal government. We are what's called an entitlement community, which is distinguished from grantees that receive money that is delivered from the federal government to the state and then to the community. We, because of demographic, economic reasons, we are among many Massachusetts communities that receive money directly from the federal government. As I just came to learn through Dave in the last week or two, purportedly, the basis of the Office of the Inspector General's investigation was because it believed that we were a pass-through entity rather than a direct grantee, which came as a great surprise to me because I did review the organizations, the grantees, that were reviewed by the State Office of the Inspector General. It reviewed DHCD, which is a state recipient, and then continued on to investigate seven other communities which were direct entitlement communities. So that sort of didn't quite add up, in my opinion. I don't know how you investigate the state and then go on to investigate other communities thinking that they're state grantees. So that was surprising. But the Inspector General's report focused on things that were, first of all, it took place. We were notified that we would receive this grant of nearly $1 million in the spring of 2009. The contract was awarded, I believe, in September. I think that is when our grant agreement was dated. So in the spring of 2009, we issued an RFP. We held two bidders' conferences. I have the listing of the people attended. Both of those bidders' conferences included about 15 or so participants who were interested in participating in the grant process. They could have either participated as quote-unquote the lead agency or as service providers. There were two applicants for lead agency, which is really, the entity that sort of steers the ship, and then it can offer sub-grants to service providers. So we received two applicants for for lead agency. One was awarded to Jewish Community Family Services, or Jewish Children Family Services, sorry. And that was vetted through a public process. We received a very comprehensive response to our RFP from them, that delineated all the services they would provide, their ability to provide those services, their history of providing similar emergency assistance services within the communities that we serve, which include Newton, Watertown, and Waltham. Once we review those two requests, or those two proposals for lead agency, we vetted them with the Human Services Advisory Committee, which is sort of the advisory group that deals with these kinds of grants. They recommended that JF&CS be awarded the contract, and then that was further vetted with the Planning and Development Board as a community development board, and then it went to the mayor for final approval. So that was sort of the process of selection.
I just have the question, how many of these kinds of grants might you get or be offered?
This is kind of a special grant. No. Typically, the City of Newton receives, on an annual basis, a community development block grant. Our FY13 grant is about $1.7 million. That's been cut dramatically. We have a home grant, which is only a couple hundred thousand. We're the lead agency on the home for the home grant, which includes 14 consortium members. But the amount that Newton gets is pretty small. It's a couple hundred thousand. And we also get emergency solutions grant. In FY13, we'll get $175,000 to provide other kinds of emergency assistance for homeless prevention and shelter services. So those are the three that we get typically. This particular grant was part of the American Reinvestment and Recovery Act in 2009. Selected grantees got, you know, entitlement communities got some grants. So it was sort of a unique grant, in a sense. Although it provided services that were in some ways similar to emergency solutions grants, and there were a lot of lessons learned through this particular program that informed changes that were made to the emergency solutions grant that we get on an annual basis. So JF&CS was awarded the contract. It had sub-grantees, and, you know, we entered into a contract with them. We, as the grantee, are required to monitor them as a subrecipient. And so we've done on an annual basis. We've had two monitorings without findings. We've determined that they've been doing the job in the way that we expect them to. They have also been subject to what's called an A-133 audit, which is required by the federal Federal Office of Management and Budget for entities that receive $500,000 or more in federal funding. And their audit revealed no findings or concerns. So they had a squeaky clean audit of this program. The A-133 audit process requires that they do financial testing, compliance with regulations testing. You know, so they test cases. They don't go in and evaluate every single case that was undertaken, but they do a sampling. So we have been comfortable with the way they administer the grant, and we work very closely with them. Would it be useful for me to go through the findings that the OIG came up with, or would you prefer to ask questions or more background?
I wouldn't mind a couple minutes on the very last letter, just to make sure people know. So the Office of Inspector General sent a lengthy letter to the city. The city responded with six major findings. The city sent a letter back to the OIG with their responses, which were largely saying, we disagree with each of the six. And then the OIG responded with another letter saying, if I could paraphrase, you don't get it.
Yes.
You didn't understand what we said to you. You misunderstood, and we disagree with your disagreement. Mm-hmm. Would that be a fair paraphrase?
Yes.
So I think it'd be, from my point of view, it'd be interesting to understand two things. One, your response to the last letter, and then I think more importantly, what lessons learned and what actually, having gone through this program and response and listening to the OIG, is there anything that should be changed going forward or that you've already changed? And one other thing, do Dave, or I want to say Howard in particular, want to ask any questions or make a comment now, because in a sense the two of you are particular experts. Okay.
I think the January letter in response to our analysis of the findings, I found it to be kind of a strange letter in a sense. It sort of says that we're missing the point. I think that they made certain assertions about how we were running the program that we disputed in great detail, supported by facts and regulation. So I'm pretty comfortable with it. There is one thing that I would have changed probably if I had had, you know, we actually got the letter in August of last year, and that was a few weeks before I actually started working with the city. So, you know, it required some research. I was familiar with the program because in my prior position, you know, we also were recipient of this grant. And some of the assertions that they made at the outset were just, they just kind of didn't make any sense to me. For example, they said, you didn't do an RFP, you did an RFP in name only. I can't even speculate as to what that might mean. You know, we've got a document that says request for proposals. It has very clear and detailed requests. The response to those requests were in great detail. The lead agency respondents were extremely meticulous in their responses. We incorporated by reference into the RFP the announcement of the grant and its requirements and the regulations that govern it. That just didn't make sense to me. I think it was perhaps an off-the-cuff comment that was made, but, you know, at the end of the day, when you're subject to a review and an audit, the documents carry the day, not a comment by, you know, anybody who might have been, you know, producing those comments. Sir. The one thing that personally I would have changed with the benefit of hindsight was they did make an allegation that I think it was the second allegation, was that
arbitrary increasing payments.
Yeah, we arbitrarily increased payments. And what happened there was...
That's when I would agree with you on this, yes.
This was really my only concern. And we've vetted this entire process with HUD. HUD is the regulatory agency here, and it has jurisdiction over the grant, which means that if it had concerns about the way we were running the grant, first of all, it could have monitored us and still can monitor us. And if their concerns were grave that we were mismanaging the grant, they would have brought in the Office of the Inspector General, the HUD Inspector General, which is really kind of the big gun, you know, in this process. I've been through a couple of OIG investigations at the federal level, and it's a much more... I've found the HUD Inspector General to be much more diligent and much more forensic in its research than this appears to be. So going back to arbitrarily increasing payments, when we received the RFPs for the various service providers, both the lead agencies and the general service providers, they identified what they would charge us for various costs. And the award that we made was $50 for case management per hour, and I think $60 for legal services.
Just to be specific so we can get this on record, the Family and Children's Services proposal had rates of $48.48 per hour and $53.73 per hour. The first was the hourly rate, the second was legal services. In fact, we awarded it higher than the proposal. It was, instead of 48, we granted 50, and instead of 53.73, we granted 60 per hour. Which did strike me as peculiar.
Why,
when the proposal is lower, would you ever grant a higher amount?
This is a good question.
Yeah, that's
it's a fair question.
It is okay. A fair question.
But the order of magnitude that was identified by the OIG was different from the reality. I have my notes here someplace. So, for example, hourly rates submitted by agencies through our procurement process. And this is an appendix to the OIG's report. It included all of the applicants and their proposed hourly rates, and then it came up with a median hourly rate of $46.55. But they also included entities that did not participate in the program. So it sort of artificially deflated the cost. You know, however, you know, why would you pay $1.52 more for a service per hour than you could have? Don't really have a good answer to that. I wouldn't have done it, but...
And this was before your time, and you don't recall being involved in it either.
And
we agree that that's a fair question to raise, and we were to do it differently, we'd probably stick with the actual rather than round it for convenience.
And the legal services provided, they use Boston College Legal Assistance Bureau, and they sort of distorted with the reality of what of that was, in that they have student attorneys who are not licensed attorneys who charge $35 an hour, and then they have supervising attorneys who I believe charge $100 an hour. So I think that when this contract was undertaken, it seemed fair and reasonable in light of the totality of the circumstances. But again, it's a point fairly made.
So what's the next step? I mean, who's going to play next? Them?
The stimulus funds are no longer being made available. The program's ended.
We have $126 left in this $1 million program.
So they wrote to you, you wrote back, they wrote back again, and they said they're not great. And you didn't have to respond to that?
No, we didn't have to respond at the first instance because they have no jurisdiction over this grant.
That's what I wonder. Why is the state involved in this in the first place?
Magnificent question. Yeah. They shouldn't have been. And when we contacted HUD, because throughout this process we wanted to be completely transparent and work with the field office, you never want to run afoul of the HUD regulations, and you certainly don't want to, ask for forgiveness. You always want to stay in front of these things instead of behind them. But we were completely upfront with HUD. I believe HUD may have been copied on the OIG's letter.
I think they were.
I'm trying to remember.
Has HUD gotten back to you and said, I don't know why they investigated you, we're okay with you?
They have. Oh. And I printed out the email this morning, and somehow they didn't make it up the stairs. But we sent them a letter, or we sent them an email in September, and
this
they
is
said,
HUD.
Yes, our field office representative. So, no, this first letter, this is a January letter. This did not go to HUD.
Okay.
But when we responded to HUD, well, first, when we got the letter, we called the field office and said, here's what happened. And I believe that it was sent... So the first letter did not go to HUD, but we contacted HUD and said, the State Inspector General has come to us. They've proffered these findings. We want to make sure that we're completely upfront with you. And the response, if I can paraphrase, was Scott Cleveland, who is our HUD field office representative, said, we're not sure why the state is investigating this grant. It's federally regulated. They don't have jurisdiction. And, we don't plan to pursue this at this time. So when we got the letter, we responded. We copied the field office, both the head honcho and our normal field office rep, and said, here are our responses to these findings. We wanted you to be fully aware of our respective positions, and please let us know if you'd like us to follow up on any of these matters. And... they said, thanks, no, we're good. And just in the last week or two, having had a conversation with Dave, I sent the field office a note saying, I just wanted to make sure that, when we left our superhero, HUD wasn't planning on following up on these findings. Is that still your position? And he said, yes, absolutely. We have no plans to pursue this matter.
And my guess is that they're reviewing ARRA grants generally, most of which come through the state. This one didn't happen to come through the state. They're reviewing the ARRA program for lots of subrecipients, mm-hmm. I think. That's not you in this case.
That's not us. And when Dave mentioned that to me, that they were supposedly reviewing the ARRA grants that passed through the state, I looked at the list. Every single one on the list, other than DHCD, the state office, they were all entitlement communities. So,
but you've not received anything from the state saying, okay, we're finished.
The state?
Meaning
OIG.
Yeah, OIG. That we don't...
No, the last communication we had was in January. And I think that, that was just a pro forma response because we disputed their allegations and they basically said...
And they don't really have any authority to come in and punish you.
They have none. If the HUD OIG comes to review us, then they can go through every file that we have. They can conduct a complete forensic investigation. And if they determine that we mismanaged the grant or did anything inconsistent with the regulations, they can ask the city to repay the funds. So and that applies to every HUD grant.
So what? Did you close the loop with the state, even notwithstanding the fact that you think and HUD thinks they have no jurisdiction here because they will torture you the next time they actually have jurisdiction if you basically say, not talking to you anymore?
I don't think so. Because I think that their allegations are generally without basis, with the one exception that we talked about. And they have no jurisdiction. And HUD's, I have relationships with a lot of people at HUD, and I also talked to a number of the other grantees who were who were investigated, and they all had pretty much the same reaction that I did.
I'm asking a different question, though, and I won't belabor the point, but I'll just take at face value everything you're saying. You insisting, you being right that they don't have jurisdiction doesn't mean the OIG believes that. So all I'm asking is your life going to be hell the next time OIG has jurisdiction if you don't at least try to close the loop with them?
I don't believe so. I think that it's not a picnic whenever the state OIG comes to visit. It's not a picnic when the federal OIG comes to visit either. But I don't think that, at this point it's just, I disagree with you, you disagree with me, and I disagree with your disagreement. So I don't think there's any value to be gained by disputing that. I think it's just a difference of opinion. A lot of their findings were based on what they call best practices. The way we wrote our contract and the way we implemented the program was based on the regulations, which at the end of the day is where it all begins and ends. Maybe we could have done things a little bit better. They made a finding that we could have negotiated. When we paid rental rearages, we could have negotiated down the amount that would be paid to landlords. And yes, if we had done that, and we did in several cases, but if we had done that across the board in every case and made that a condition of every grant that we made, we might have saved money and we might have helped more people potentially, I think on a pretty small scale, frankly. But if we had done that, we also would have violated the contractual obligations between the landlords and the tenants. You can weigh that public policy interest. But, again, we complied with the regulations.
So I have two questions. I'm looking at the last, page 13. So the OIG recommends Newton strengthen its grantee, sub-grantee, manager, and procurement practices. OIG hopes these findings assist your program to identify and mitigate program risks. So following up on what Matt said. I guess two questions. One, what did you learn and how have you strengthened your practices? And two, maybe a letter to them saying, thank you for your comments. It's caused, as a result of that, we've looked at all of our things. While we don't agree with yours, we will continue as always to strengthen this, and thank you.
We did that, And we did that in our first response to them, saying, you know, we understand the purpose, we understand your mission.
Okay.
We thank you for your, you know, review of our program and your comments. And, you know, we will we'll continue to consult with the regulatory authority.
Although, Anne-Marie, you didn't do what Gail suggested, which says, here are some ways we've taken into account your suggestions and improved our process, which, in fact, it sounds like you have thought deeply about their comments and double-checking. Have you improved or changed anything in response, or are you so clear that you were doing it right to begin with that there was almost nothing to learn?
There's always something to learn.
That's my...
Right. However, there is always something to learn. I would agree with that wholeheartedly. However, in January, this grant was about 95% complete. So there's really nothing to be done on this grant.
No, but we're going forward.
On a go forward, first of all, we're never going to get this grant again. But when we look at our RFPs, our RFP processes, you know, the price for services will never be greater than that which was off. I mean, I can guarantee that under my watch that won't happen because I won't do it. That's pretty much the only thing. You know, my first concern will always be compliance with the regulations. And we confer with the HUD field office on a regular basis with everything that we do. You know, anytime we make a change, we always run it by them. You know, we have a very good relationship with the field office. And our first concern is always with the regulatory authority. But, you know, this pointed out something, you know, the thing about... you know, the cost for services. I mean, you should never pay for more than, I mean, even if it's $1 an hour, you shouldn't pay more than somebody, it's just, it looks bad.
Lenny had a question, then Gail may have had another one.
My question is actually to Dave and Maureen. Is there anything that you feel needs to be done at this point, or that our auditors feel needs to be done at this point, or?
Well, as they said in one of the responses, this never came up in connection with the single audit review. The only thing I can think we could do is just write this guy a letter and say, thank you very much, you've been helpful to us. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like eating a little bit of crow, but, mm-hmm. you know, if it makes him happy, and, you know, the fellow who did some of the work as an independent contractor was Melanson and Heath, the forensic auditor there, guy who did some of the work in the police station for us.
Oh, okay. So he may appear again.
Well, he's fine. I mean, he's an independent contractor. He's the one who said, I think the state OIG did this because he was under the impression that this was a federal pass-through grant, which obviously wasn't the case. This other auditor was also the one that says that, you know, they understand they don't have any further jurisdiction in this matter, but they're not going to send you another letter, I don't think, saying everything is fine and good. So, mm-hmm. you know... I don't see it would hurt anything just to send him a letter and say thank you and, you know.
Here's what we've done.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even go into a lot of what you have done.
Yeah,
I would just say, any other suggestions you have, we're open to it. Never hurts.
Yeah, just to maintain the relationship.
Maintain the relationship.
That's fair.
Yeah.
That's fine. We can do that.
Emory's spent a tremendous amount of time on this, and, you know, it's one of those types of things that you have to deal with, but she probably will never deal with the State Office of Inspector General, but some of the others probably will, and, you know, if they want to yank our chain, I'm sure they can.
Yeah, I feel
be the first
I work for the state, and I dealt with the OIG there, and I had a very similar experience.
There's an internal process question that I also have. By chance, Scott Lennon mentioned this at our last meeting. It was news to Maureen and Dave Wilkinson. I don't know the answer. This should something like this have been on Dave's... Should he have known that the OIG was in touch with you and there had been a flurry of letters so that...
They don't deal with the accounting officer typically.
Right, but I just wonder.
Well, just to put him on
going forward, if that would happen.
This is kind of
should
an anomaly. So, you know, having had the benefit of the experience, you know, if something like this happens, you know, the likelihood I think is pretty small. But if it should happen again, certainly I'll put Dave on notice. But you know, they've
been in contact with them. I have two last points. One is, I think that anything that involves the financial, has a financial impact on the city at all, and no matter what department it is, Maureen and David should be alerted to it. Even if it's just, we got this letter, you don't have to worry about it, because you never know who else is going to find it or whatever. So that, and I don't know how within the city you get that message out, but that's just my sense, is it should be at least alerting you to it.
The way you get that message out is delivered by the person across the hall. I agree with you. If I was across the hall, I would want to know even the most mundane financial issue, but that message has got to come from them.
All right. So when you say that, do you mean
the mayor?
The mayor. Okay. So I would just say that I think that anything that could possibly have a financial ramification should be notified, Terry.
And typically, I would say that's exactly how we run the city. The mayor doesn't sign a thing without me. We actually have these little slips that we attach to everything. Everything that goes through that office is reviewed by me first, then Bob Rooney for any operating issues, and then the mayor will sign it. He doesn't even sign it.
More of a general, you know, we've been talking about bigger picture practices and procedures. It's sort of like the culture of what gets done, how things get done in an organization. I mean, in some places you say, I wouldn't sign anything without the CFO at least knowing it. That's the culture you want here.
Right. No, what I was going to say, though, is I think I would tend to say that our office probably fell down on this. This is addressed to the mayor, this letter in January. So I'm not quite sure where this letter actually went.
You need to talk to the mayor. The person who opens the mayor's letter.
You know what's really odd, Maureen, on the response, they didn't even copy the mayor. Mm-mm. That's how Scott got involved. They copied Scott.
On the January 10th letter, it
literally addressed to the mayor.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. So I'm not quite sure what happened with this, because
they happen. When they happen, I think it's a good time to just, in a nice way, whoever says it.
And the first letter went to the mayor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The August 2011 one is also to the mayor.
So I don't know what
happened. Right. Okay. So that may require a little investigation by you.
And that's my point. Something happened in our office.
Right, on the inbox, not the outbox.
Yes.
The inbox.
I want to make one point, though. I want to assure everybody in the room, I agree with what Gail has said, but as someone who goes back to the days of Teddy Mann, and as does David, I can assure you that the level of scrutiny that this administration has over what other people might consider to be minutia, that this is the highest level of scrutiny that I have seen going back, 30 years.
Well, I just think part of
Maureen reviewing, I think you're still reviewing every purchase order and even the smallest ones and things like that. So
I think, one, that's great, and that's the thing I've gotten since I've come on board here, but I think it's again, when we do policies and procedures and all the other things on our agenda, there's some overarching themes that have to be there, because if they're not there, then you say, well, I didn't see that specifically written in here that I had to call you on such and such. So my other point, Matt, was saying, is just for you in the planning department to be sure that you have the resources and the processes and procedures that you need, because these kinds of things will always come up.
They will.
Just lessons learned. It's not like anybody said, oh, you didn't do a good job. It's like, because we all know that oversight and governance is only going to increase down the road.
Sure. We are grateful for you coming in. If you choose to write a letter, perhaps copy or particularly Dave and Maureen, and Dave will let us know.
I copy the committee just to let them know. I think that would send a message to the oversight requirements of ARRA are actually going to be put in place now for all federal grants. There's some legislation moving through the Congress right now that's going to kind of institutionalize all those reporting requirements. I think even make them more restrictive. So. Mm-hmm.
I agree. Everything at the federal level is becoming increasingly restrictive and with increased oversight.
And ARRA is serving as a model for a lot of the reporting requirements that are going to be coming down in the future. So
yeah,
the state
ARA
level
has,
and also,
you know, there is a great deal of reporting requirements that were unique to these grants, which is, you know, you have to input into a quarterly database all of, you know, the human hours that were invested in administering the grant, and, you know, and that was a new requirement that we haven't seen in other grants. So I wouldn't
be
surprised.
That's going to happen for all grants in the future. So.
Great. Thank you.
Great. Thank
we
you
appreciate
so much.
Your coming
appreciate
in.
Appreciate your
feedback. You will recall that we broke into four subcommittees. The four are accounting and audit. Gail's helping us there. Internal controls and financial policies. Tony Legalbo, who could not be here today, by the way, also, let me send apologies. Scott Lennon had every intention of being here, but he had to be in Billerica for work, so he apologizes. Bob Fox had every intention of being here. He was flying from Mexico City back through Miami last night here. And thunderstorms trapped him in Miami last night. So he also apologizes. Tony Legalbo had hoped to be here, and there was something work-related for him also. So there you go. Gail can give us an update on accounting and audit. Howard, who's leading up the investment policies, can give us an update. The risk assessment, Dave's going to cover for Tony Legalbo and give us an update. The one that we have not made some progress on yet is the Bob Fox internal controls, the Bob Fox risk assessment. It's Tony has internal controls. I just reversed the words. Bob's just sent an apology last night. He's been just flat out between some family and business things. But that's the whistleblower policy, and I'm sure we'll get that moving soon. So, any order.
Okay.
Gail? And we'll probably just keep it to 5 minutes per committee if we can.
Ruth Ann, Maureen, David, and I met last week, I guess. And we went over the comments in the management letter and I think have a good process in place to address them. First of all, some of them have been done and finished. One of the ways we looked at it was which were ones that have been there in prior years and still haven't been fixed versus which ones are new, just categorizing them. Which ones have kind of cash risk associated with them, cash we're not getting, and another category was reputation risk. So we sort of put them all in different categories on it. And then Ruth Ann sent a letter to three groups, I think, right? One for the student activity funds question, one for the police detail, and one for the community development authority, saying that, and attached the copy from the management letter, saying that this committee is met and that we would like our subcommittee or some people there in would like to meet with them to understand what they're doing to address the issues. So I think that's the absolute appropriate way to do it because, as Maureen and Dave said, things that are in here that are in their area that they can fix by themselves are easier. The harder ones are the ones that start to go to another, you know, to the police department or the community development, etc. And that having the voice of this committee behind him saying, we just want to meet with you and know what are you doing to fix this might help. So I don't know where we are in that.
Shauna has the Herculean task of actually doing the scheduling.
Yeah, it looks like the 12th.
So the subcommittee might be meeting on the 12th and with each of the three groups.
It
looks like probably that will be a couple of hours. And Sue, that probably involves you for the student activity.
Yep. And then we did talk about
what time
the
on the 12th?
Reports on internal control.
4 o'clock, probably. The 4.
You
told me
4.
Yes. That this subcommittee.
It's the 4,
12th is the June.
June 12th,
That this subcommittee might also look at
the report of internal controls and follow up on things that are in there, too. So that was something that we hadn't done. And Ruth Ann gave me the name of a woman, Becky Searles, who has had a lot of experience in the area of she's an actuary. She was at PricewaterhouseCoopers, Perrin, and Mercer. And so I'm going to reach out to her and ask her if she would work with our subcommittee on the second major topic, which is post-retirement benefits, et cetera, et cetera. And I was saying to Ruth Ann when I came in here, you know, all the publicity in Wisconsin about this. This is a problem that is sitting out there that is not going to go away. And I just think that we need to continue to be chipping away at it. And some of it is educating people as to what it is, because it's not like, I mean, even if he's out in accounting, it'll never make a difference, and Standard & Poor's and Moody's won't pay attention. Well, actually, you know, there is going to be cash. That's what I always say about these things. When it comes down to actual cash coming out, then you got to address it. It's not a fake thing. It's a real thing. So we'll try to address that one.
Once you do set up the subcommittees, if you could perhaps let the entire committee know, if anybody wants to come to another subcommittee meeting, anybody's welcome. So if it's of interest and you're free, join us. So.
But what you said about the financial people here, I have to tell you, I've seen a lot in my day. They're very good. It's just that the issues are so huge.
Howard, maybe an investment policies ad hoc subcommittee.
Sure. We also met last week. Maureen, David, Dan, and myself, same group of people. And we got from the city a list of one of the things we were looking at was where all the money is kept, where the bank accounts are. So we have a full listing of all the bank accounts the city has right now. Went over the investment policy the policy that governs deposits that goes back, I think, to 1991. We're trying to set up a meeting. I think Sean's trying to set up a meeting with the treasurer so we can get a little more detail on the policies that surround where how he opened the bank accounts and where the money is deposited. So that was one item. I also reached out to we talked about alternative investments or return investment policies. I reached out to Tony earlier this week. I haven't heard back, so I was hoping to see him today, but he's not here. So I'll reach out to him again. And I think I need to do some research on that as well, as you know what other cities and towns are doing, you know, within the state and in other states, and what the general, you know, what the best practices are across states. We also had a discussion of what the requirements are for sending OPEB monies to the state. We had a discussion. There's a state law that governs that, but I think we may need to do a little more work. I think the city does have to set up an irrevocable trust, which may not be covered under the state policy. Maybe we have to do that separately. So those are the things we're working on.
Okay. And any sense of whether we actually have a meeting with Jim?
You do.
Okay. Still to be determined. Great. Perhaps, Dave, you'll cover for Tony with the internal controls and financial policies.
But I think we might have overlapped on the risk assessment. I mean, maybe we got our committees confused when we were working on the assignments. But Tony put together...
Right. And by the way, Tony sent us an email last night, and this is what I think Dave's...
Tony put together a...
It's a two-pager when you pass it around.
A work plan.
Dave, you're going to need two pages.
A work plan for what we think is probably the first risk assessment exercise that we're going to actually take a stab at, and that's over the cash cycle. The initial plan was to look at just cash proceeding. I think Gail had suggested, rightfully so, that we look at the whole cycle, including the custody, which is going to be phase two, and the disbursement process, phase three. But in terms of the first phase, the cash receiving, this work plan has a little outline of how we think we might go at looking at the cash receiving process between now and, say, the end of December. And what it essentially entails is Sue, Maureen, and I doing the legwork, collecting the data about what's collected where and what the processes are in the departments. They're reporting back to the subcommittee, using the subcommittee to actually brainstorm about where there might be risks in terms of loss, primarily loss of assets, but also maybe not timely reporting and therefore problems for financial reporting, with an emphasis on identifying any changes we want to make but only changes that the committee can concur have a benefit that's going to outweigh the risk of actually making a change, because there are a whole range of opportunities for doing things differently, but the cost of some of them are phenomenal, and it might be a situation where we're like using an atomic bomb to kill an ant. And so that in a nutshell would be the idea that the subcommittee would do the risk assessment with us, report back to this committee, and then probably sometime after the start of the new fiscal year or the new calendar year, we'd start looking at the custody and disbursement cycles. The disbursement cycles can be really easy to do.
Maureen or Sue, anything to add?
No, I unfortunately missed the meeting.
We kind of scheduled at the last minute, so... Mm-hmm.
Fridays at 4 o'clock are tough.
Do you feel, Maureen and David, that that the work that the subcommittees and the committee are doing, that we're adding value and helping you to do your job? Because I would just say that if ever you feel we're like going down a road that you're in the world, that you please say that. Because especially those of us who are not in municipal side, what we might think is a big deal, you know, we used to say, yeah, it's not a big deal. I forgot to add that I am meeting at PwC today with them on the EMC audit, but they've arranged to have the person who heads their municipal accounting to come in and talk to me a little bit. So,
all right.
I don't know, but I'll find out.
Other questions, comments? The last one is really the whistleblower work, and I don't know whether even internally, I think let's wait. Let's try and get Bob in the next week or two and just get that process going. I think with probably Dolores as part of that group, that initial working group, what do you think, just to get it kicked off?
So I mentioned
maybe somebody from law.
Law, right, good point. Shauna, poor woman, will probably call on you. Okay.
Wanted to say something that I had said to Ruth Ann before. The issue of the naming rights, which, apart from my own personal feelings, as I was reading the tab this week, it had a sentence that was like, caught my eye, and I thought, oh boy, this is all it says. The naming rights will open it up to companies who do business with the city. And I thought to myself, oh wow, that is a can of worms. So, but what Ruth Ann said, no, we meant in the city, and I thought, well, actually it doesn't matter, in or with. So I just want to kind of go on record that once you start having an arrangement like that with a person or an organization, you really have to ratchet up the controls to make sure that that hasn't bought influence in the city. The example I would give is whoever runs the cafeteria makes a big difference. Donation to name the cafeterias, and I'm going to take, you know, away from. I just think you really have to be careful. And this is the conflict of interest. So when you talk about whistleblower or risk, the, you know, related party transactions, the insider, I mean, this is a can of worms to be really mindful of. And some of it is reputation risk. Some of it is there's never an issue, but you better be sure that you're. Policies and procedures are very, very clear on that because,
good point.
Well, that's why, one of the reasons why it hasn't just sailed through the board, and there was a, what, discussion last night?
Actually, it ended up not being on the agenda.
And it hasn't come to finance yet, but it is receiving probably more scrutiny than some people would like, but Anyway, we're looking at it for sure.
Yeah. And I just think it really, when I read that sentence, do business with the city. Maybe it was a
I don't think anybody suggested anything like that.
No, I don't.
It's just, you know, that.
No, but
it is, having said that, it's a fair point.
Oh, yeah,
I mean, but I don't, but you're right, I don't remember anyone saying anything on it, but it's a fair point.
Yeah.
I think people certainly realize you can't have that. And I don't know who made the comment.
I don't think it was a comment. It was, you know, it was just the script of writing that it is. But I just...
It's in the tab, it must be true.
No. I didn't think it is. But I did think that, I mean, totally apart from that, that just, I don't know how you go down that road without being having to be really careful that that doesn't buy influence.
We're just clarifying when the next meeting is, and my calendar still doesn't match with the reality. So, can I ask a favor? Will you send the committee one
yes.
more time our confirmed
entire schedule,
our entire schedule for the year? That would be great. But Shauna, who always has a good memory, believes it's on Tuesday the 19th at 8:15, which
the 19th
isn't in my calendar.
Of June.
Is it in your calendar? Whose calendar is it in?
What? Somebody?
19th? June 19th.
I have it on that
it's
time too.
You do.
Yeah.
Okay, good. I'm glad somebody's got it right. So
8:30, right?
It might be 8:15.
8:15, right?
Okay, so that meeting will occur, assuming that we make some progress with Jim Reardon and with the Accounting and Audit Subcommittee meeting on the 12th to review that progress. The other thing that I think could happen on the 19th is there's some management letter work that you has been done that you just could report out.
The disaster recovery.
Right, and some other ones that we could just almost put a check mark by, is my understanding. Anything else before we break?
I might be able to give you some feedback from my meeting today with the BWC people.
Thank you all. We'll see you in a couple weeks.